The NO File, the ultimate Saints podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome in. It is time for another edition of the podcast. So much to be able to talk about. All the action from week two. We'll be breaking it down. Offense, defense, all the injuries to talk about. Speaking of injuries and around the league, we will go around the league with the coach, Brian Billick. He joins us as well, as he always does each week, to give us his analysis on what happened in week two and even looking ahead to week three. And then this week in overtime from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, Jenny Ventris joins us to be able to go through our six-pack of questions. But as always, we kick things off with the big interview. Let's get to it.
The big interview.
Let's talk Saints. To do so, we bring in John Hendricks. You find him on Twitter at John J. Hendricks. That's Hendricks as in Jimmy. From the Canal Street Chronicles, also a Saints freelance reporter for the Sun-Herald. And the Canal Street Chronicles you find at Saints CSC, where he's the managing editor. John, let's start here. We can dive into some specifics, but just your overall thoughts now as the team sits at 0-2.
Well, you know, the first thing that pops into my mind is the team has been here before. Fifth time that they've been there in season history since Sean Payton has taken the reins in 2006. Look, it'd be one thing if the Saints got blown out and were, you know, just not able to play some of their good football like we've seen. First game, they played some really good offense. Second game, they played some really good defense. You know, and I think Brandon Cook said it best when he said that this team's two plays away from being 2-0. Big difference, obviously, but we know the odds are stacked against them, as 12% of teams that start 0-2 are not likely to make the playoffs.
So now let's dive into this game against the Giants after what they were able to do in terms of scoring against Oakland. Surprised that they could only get 13 on the board against New York, or did you think this was going to be a low-scoring game?
Yeah, I think a lot of people saw this coming as a repeat of last year's game, but I wasn't one of them. I figured, you know, the Giants making such a different, heavy investment on their defense was going to pay off a little bit, and then I was thinking the Saints defense, you know, what they were able to accomplish, I think those canceled each other out. I think the biggest shock for me was the fact that the play calling was nowhere near what it was like in week one. Kobe Fleener had a lot of opportunities. He had some drops. Him and Drew Brees clearly are not on the same page right now. Brandon Coleman had two crucial drops. He had also a very crucial offensive holding penalty. Travaris Cadet had some drops. So they didn't get any help in that aspect. They weren't able to pick up the blitz on third down. They went 3-for-13 on third downs, which is very uncharacteristic for a Sean Payton team. And they only ran the ball 13 times as opposed to 44 passing attempts. So definitely not what I was expecting to see out of them on the offensive front.
It seemed, John, for a little bit during that game, it was almost as though they, in the game planning, they were, and this isn't quite the right word, but that they were scared of what they were going to see in the front seven out of the Giants. And as you pointed out, the Giants have made an effort to get better, but as you said, they didn't try to run it. You know, they weren't successful in the third down. They were allowing that pressure to get in there. It was almost as though the Giants and the defense were in their head before the game even kicked off.
Yeah, and I think it was evident on those third down calls. And it was crazy because to start the game, they went with a lot more running. And I said to myself, and I tweeted this out, I said, I like this attack, the fact that they're committing to the run. They're trying to give some chances. Mark Ingram had a couple of plays where he was able to find some daylight. You know, they had a couple to get called back from a holding call. But I liked what they did to start out with, but then they tried to get creative. They tried to get to where, you know, when they got the three turnovers, do a little cute, tried a few different things, and it just didn't work. And so I think, you know, give the Giants a lot of credit, because if you're going to run against that team with Damon Harrison up front and Hankins, it's no easy feat. And then you have to worry about Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul on the edge. And so it clearly played a factor in this game.
John, you talked about Kobe Fleener. I mean, I look over the stats and I see two games where he's been targeted 12 times but has only caught it three times. Is it panic mode yet at the tight end position?
You know, I wouldn't say panic mode, but at the same point, there's a a lot of disappointment so far through two games. Sean Payton's kind of come out and said that, you know, it's still they're not on the same page right now. It just he's still a work in progress is what we're told. And then it begs the question, well, why did the Saints shell out $36 million for the next 5 years, guarantee half of that deal for Kobe Fleener? Because, you know, through two games, I thought Fleener's had ample opportunity. You know, he's been in the victim. I don't think it's all his fault. He's had some passes thrown behind him. He's had some passes where, you know, he's been very contested. But at the same time, this offense, this was a game they could have used Kobe Fleener, and he could have really, really changed the opinion of a lot of Saints fans. But after two games, we're none too impressed right now.
John, when you look, though, at the other side, let's talk about a bright spot from a receiving standpoint, and that's Michael Thomas, the rookie out of Ohio State. He's been targeted 11 times. He's caught 10 of them. You know, kind of reminds people of Marquise Colston back in the day. Obviously, he's been a bright spot receiving-wise, being the new face on the block.
Yeah, Michael Thomas, or as we like to call him, the BMW trio with Brandon, Michael, and Willie. Those guys have been doing a fantastic job at getting open. Willie Steed's playing some of his best football, but Michael Thomas is showing his value, and he didn't log as many snaps as he did in the first game, but when he was called upon, he did what he needed to and then some. I thought, you know, his catches, he just shows how good his hands are, and the fact that he can make some moves and turn something into nothing. They definitely hit gold with their second round choice of Michael Thomas. So valuable piece to this offense.
Your take on the defensive performance against the Giants, holding them down to just 16 points.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's the first time in NFL history where a defense has forced three turnovers, not allow a touchdown, and not come away with a win. So that's kind of sums up what's happened and kind of just takes away from things. But they did a great job. I thought Sterling Moore, you know, considering he was a guy who came off the street, so to speak, he did an adequate job against Odell Beckham Jr. I thought they had a little difficulty with Sterling Shepard, as expected. But, you know, when it came down to it, the defense held strong against the run. They were able to get some turnovers, which is something they didn't have in the first game. And they were able to get some sacks, which they didn't have in the first game. So that's a huge improvement. And I think one of the big things that people might overlook is the fact that they ran with three safety sets with Bird, Vaccaro, and Von Bell, the rookie, which really played to their strength in that game for sure.
One extra day to prepare. Obviously, the next action for the Saints is going to be the Monday Nighter against Atlanta. It's a home game. Two out of the next three are within the division. So, John, obviously some things need to start to click or the wheels could come off quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Atlanta comes to town at the right time. 10-year anniversary of the Steve Gleason block punt, the return to the domes, rebirth, you know, call it and label it what you will. But, you know, the Saints were in a similar situation last year where they had the Falcons come in. They were undefeated. The Saints were at 1-4. And that Thursday night football game kind of gave them the spark they needed for their 2015 season. They go on to get up to 4-4. Obviously, it didn't end well for the Saints last season. But I think this is the game where, as I've said, this is where the 2016 season starts. You know, whether they lost the first two games or won the first two games, this is where they have to pick up a victory. And then you look at next week with San Diego. That's not going to be an easy game, but you got the early bye week, so you got to put these two victories together, and it starts with beating Atlanta for sure.
What do you think happens in the Atlanta game? Give me a prediction.
Well, look, I think this is one, if I can go bold, I think the Saints are going to win this game. I think they're going to come out and fire on all cylinders. I do expect to start back and forth, but I think New Orleans is going to finally pull out ahead and win probably by two touchdowns is what I'm going to tell you.
John J. Hendricks on Twitter is how you find him. He's a Saints freelance reporter for the Sun-Herald, also the managing editor of Canal Street Chronicles, which is on Twitter at SaintsCSC. It's John Hendricks. John, always appreciate the time on the podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you, man.
There goes John. Up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time, as always, for us to go around the NFL, and to do that, we are joined by the coach, Brian Billick. He's presented by SeatGeek, reminding you that you can visit SeatGeek.com or you can download the SeatGeek app. Always make sure that you, your friends, your family are getting the best deal on tickets. Doesn't matter if it's a sporting event or a concert, SeatGeek helps you out with the amazing technology of Deal Score, so make sure that you have the SeatGeek app on your phone the next time you and your family are ready to head out to the big game or to a concert. Coach, let's start with Monday Night Football, where we know that Jay Cutler injured his hand, was not able to go back into the game, but more of the talk seems to be about whether or not Jay Cutler is really the right guy or the right future for Chicago. I suppose we could argue that what other choice do they have? What is your take on what you've seen from Jay Cutler and from the Bears?
Well, yeah, it's a tough question. It's always difficult to separate the play of a quarterback from what's going around him. Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jay Cutler, not the least of which is the fact that he's had something along the line of six or seven different coordinators, therefore six or seven basically different systems over the time he's been in Denver over the last 8 years. So I don't know of any quarterback that's going to function well in that situation. It may be time for Chicago to move on. What's gone under the bridge, so to speak, by way of Jay Cutler, it just hasn't been successful. This is not a very good football team. So for them to totally reshuffle the deck and try to move forward might be the thing to do.
When you look on the other side of the ball, Coach, you've got two games under Carson Wentz's belt and two wins. Granted, one against Chicago, one against Cleveland. However, what have you seen from the rookie that's impressed you the most?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule makers certainly made it certainly an easier pass for this rookie to start out with, talking about the two teams he's had to face. But having said that, you can't help but be impressed with what Carson Wentz has done. He seems to be very calm in the pocket, so to speak. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, third down has not been still real productive. I think he was 3 of 10 in the first game. He's 3 of 15 this game. So sustaining drives is something. But that will come as the rookie continues to mature in the system. And also the fact that the Eagles are staying committed to the run as best they can. You know, they ran better than 30 times and only had 100 yards. But it shows you that they're trying to keep that balance for Carson Wentz. He threw it 37 times in the first game, 34 times last night. That's ambitious for a rookie quarterback. Now, we'll see going forward whether they maintain this. The schedule's obviously going to get a little bit tougher for them as they go down the way. You know, obviously in Cleveland and Chicago having their difficulties as they try to, you know, piece some wins together here. But we're going to find out, you know, the fact that he did it at home and the fact that he did it, you know, on the road. We're going to find out this week because all but at home, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to go across from Ben Roethlisberger.
Coach, when you look at what the Patriots have been doing without Tom Brady, what's the most impressive part of it to you?
Well, anytime you lose your quarterback and then your backup quarterback, of course, we kind of get used to it with New England, don't we? We just kind of think they're going to overcome anything. This will be an interesting challenge on a short week, playing a very good Houston team. Brissett, the young rookie, obviously came in, you know, they spotted him 24-point lead, so obviously life was pretty good at that point. The key for him, and obviously Bill Belichick knows this, is to let that talent around you win for you. If they can get Gronkowski back, they have Martellus Bennett, that's Julian Edelman, those are some pretty good inside targets to help get the ball out of your hand quickly. I imagine we're going to see a lot of sprints and boots and waggles by Brissett to get out from behind the pocket. But this is going to be a challenge for you now because Houston, all but at home for New England, where they're almost unbeatable. The good thing is the cavalry is on the way in a couple weeks when they're going to get Brady back.
When you look at what the Buffalo Bills have been doing, there are a lot of folks that believe this is Rex Ryan's sort of last rodeo here and that the Bills have not been living up to the expectation of the fans or of the team. What are you seeing out of the Bills, and is this Rex Ryan's last run?
Well, the fact that he came in from a division opponent after he got fired from New York and the expectations took over the number one rated defense in the league and it has not performed well. And the fact that now that they're 0-2 and they've got Arizona and all but New England. Now, you know, it's Tom Brady-less New England. It may be a Jimmy Garoppolo-less New England. If they should struggle and lose to Arizona and then somehow at New England, and again, New England's a tough place to play, particularly without those two individuals, and lose, you know, an 0-4 Buffalo Bills team, you've already fired your offensive coordinator. it's going to be a tough road to hoe for Buffalo.
What are you seeing that are the struggles right now for the Seattle Seahawks, Coach? Very shocking, I suppose, for just about anybody to see the LA Rams wind up beating them this past weekend. They just don't seem to be in sync on offense. What are you seeing with the Seahawks?
Well, we saw this early last year. Remember, they started 0-2 last year, but I think it begins with the offensive line. They're struggling on the offensive line, so therefore they're not running the ball well. They're not protecting Russell Wilson as well. Russell Wilson finally will be likely a plus 500 throw quarterback this year, and I think he's up to it. Up to this point, he's been under 450 throws every year. Why? Because they play great defense and run the ball. Defense is not playing as well. Solid, but not as well as we've seen, particularly in their Super Bowl runs. So, yeah, it's a cascading set of events. It doesn't mean it can't get better if Russell Wilson's ankle gets a little bit better, if they can shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, again, the Seattle Seahawks teams that have gone on this great run, it was anchored by league-leading defense, top-five rushing attack, and they have neither one of those right now.
And are they missing, you talked about the running game, is it not just missing the running game but missing Marshawn Lynch specifically? Are they missing that sort of, you know, downhill Mack truck rushing attack?
Yeah, I think the physicality of Marshawn Lynch was a mentality that played into the formula for them. You get a little bit extra from Russell Wilson on the edges when he scrambles around. And so I think the way they're running the ball right now, and again, it goes back to the offensive line. I just don't think that they're performing at a level that lends itself. I mean, you talk about that called smash-mouth physical play. That's not what Seattle is right now.
When the Vikings managed to get the win to open up the brand new stadium, one of the comments that I had made, Coach, a couple of weeks ago was that this might be the best team that Sam Bradford's ever been on, and so maybe we will finally see the Sam Bradford that everybody expected coming out of college. Did you see that in the home win on Sunday night?
Yeah, when you begin with the defense, the way they're playing defense, which is just spectacular, you know, and when you look at this defense, you got to love it. Outside of Matt Barr, you name somebody on the Minnesota Viking defense. Linville Joseph is obviously pretty good, but they don't have those marquee, okay, yeah, they're anchoring their defense. They're just playing great team defense, and Mike Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that. Depending upon when Adrian Peterson can come back, they haven't been running the ball pretty well. I think that goes back to the offensive line to a degree. I think it also goes back to the fact that when you go back and look last year, when Adrian Peterson ran for better than 1,400 yards, his best game was against the Oakland Raiders. I went back and looked at that game. He was in the eye. They had two tight ends. They were playing a physical running game. And the fact that they're doing more and more out of the gun, I don't know that suits the running style, certainly not of Adrian Peterson. I'm not sure they would be better served to get back into the eye and two tight ends, let Sam Bradford hand the ball off or play action fake and send them, you know, throw the ball down the field. And with that great defense, that can be a good winning formula for this team because they're clearly a good football team.
On the other side of it from Sunday night, the Packers. Coach, what are you seeing that you like and what has you concerned with Green Bay?
Well, you know, everybody thought when Jordy Nelson came back, you know, life would be fine, that everything was going to be okay at that point. I think there's a little more to it. I think the defense, obviously, there's still some question marks there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't, although he's still making some just spectacular throws. The fact that it goes back to Minnesota playing so good on defense. Aaron Rodgers under 60%. He's not having the efficiency that we're used to seeing with Aaron Rodgers. With the running game, you know, Eddie Lacy, the slimmed down Eddie Lacy, is not necessarily generating the productivity you'd like to see. I'm not sure I wouldn't go back. It's not my place to second guess Mike McCarthy. He's an excellent play caller. But the up-tempo, high-paced Green Bay, they like that no-huddle. I'm not sure they might not be better off going back to a more structured offense. Control the clock a little bit more and let Aaron Rodgers operate from that standpoint.
Speaking of defense, through the first 2 weeks, we've seen the New York Giants give up only 32 points, 19 to the Cowboys, and of course 13 this past week in holding the Saints in check. Obviously, the Giants have been impressive through 2 weeks with this new revamped defense.
Yeah, it's nice to see that $200 million can buy you something. In today's economy. They went out and spent a bunch of money on that defense. They're playing like a top 10 defense compared to last year, which, you know, that clearly that's what they needed to approach, where they were literally last in the league. So that's quite a jump, going from last in the league in defense to jumping into the top 10. Now, we've only got two games, so we got a long way to go. But it was obviously money well spent. And then when you throw in, obviously, this emerging dynamic wide receiving core with OBJ, and obviously it's good to see Cruz back into it, and this young man Shepard, the rookie. That's quite a threesome. You'd have to go back in the Giants, back to the 2011 team when they had Plexico Burris and Victor Cruz was a part of that. Go back even further to 2007. This is clearly the best wide receiving core that we've seen out of New York.
Always great stuff with the coach, Brian Billick. He's brought to us each and every week on the NFL Files by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got that SeatGeek app on your phone or visit SeatGeek.com so you can make sure you, your family, friends, always getting the best deal on tickets. Check out Deal Score that makes sure that the tickets you've got, you can look at that stadium view and know that you're getting the best deal. Coach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned. Overtime coming up next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime, and to do that this week from Sports Illustrated, a Monday morning quarterback, Jenny Vrentas joins us. Jenny, we do a six-pack of questions here in overtime, so let's start here. Question number one, are you on the Carson Wentz bandwagon?
I'm halfway on. I think the first two wins, it's great to get off the 2-0 start. I think he and Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff have done a great job. I think he's still, like any young quarterback, still has a lot of room to grow. I hate to make any judgments after two games, but certainly how quickly he's gotten into the game and been able to make some of the throws and decisions he's made, he's certainly impressed me.
All right, so you're not on the bus quite yet, but you might be standing at the bus stop is what you're saying.
There you go. That's a great way to say it.
Okay, good. Question number two, Jenny, what right now do you think is the biggest problem facing the NFL?
Health and safety. I think it's, ultimately will determine the future of the game, how we view the game. Are we comfortable watching the game, sending our kids to play the game? So I think how the NFL and the sport of football handle health and safety over the next 10 to 15 years is critical in determining the direction of the sport.
All right. Question number three. Who right now is your current NFL player that's your favorite to interview?
Favorite player to interview? That is a great question.
Or maybe just a favorite one you've done recently. I know it's hard to single one out.
Favorite one. Right. It is hard to single one out. I always enjoy visiting with the Cardinals. They have a lot of really interesting, honest guys. And I was out there in August, and I think Tyrann Mathieu is just so fun to interview. The energy that he brings his team on the field, he just makes him so interesting off the field to talk to as well. So he's definitely a guy that I really enjoy talking with.
All right. Question number five for us here, or question number four, excuse me, as we go through. Is Rex Ryan overrated as a head coach?
I've covered Rex for a long time. I do not question his ability at all as a defensive-minded coach. Now, head coach is a big difference, but I still don't believe that he's overrated because I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve. I think he can win. I do not believe that he is on the hot seat as much as people want to say this year. So, no, I do not think he's overrated as a head coach.
As you followed the question number five here, as you followed the AFC East, there's been a lot of discussion about Darrelle Revis and whether or not he has faded as a defender. Do you buy into that? Is it time for him to slide over to safety? What's your take on Darrelle Revis?
He is certainly not playing at the same level he played at in 2009, 2010. That was when he was at the top of the mountain. So when we're used to seeing a player who lines up one-on-one with a receiver and man coverage all the time, very often with no help at all, that's so rare and unusual. So watching him now, he's not that same player. That much is clear. I don't believe it's time to put him safety yet. I think he can still be effective as a cornerback. It's just a different kind of cornerback. He's not that kind of guy you can stick on an island anymore. And that's okay. There aren't many of those guys in the game. But I think he can still be an effective cornerback.
All right, final question in our six-pack of questions here for you, Jenny. We love to do this early in the season, so we might as well do it here. If you had to hand out the NFL's MVP award after the first 2 weeks, who would you give it to?
MVP award after the first 2 weeks. Well, it's not a player, but I give it to Belichick for winning two games. But that's coach of the year, and you asked MVP award. I'm going with Von Miller.
All right. Well, see, and you're not far off, because last year on my radio show, I actually said that I thought the MVP of the league was Wade Phillips. So for you to give it to Bill Belichick after 2 weeks kind of makes sense, right?
Right. But, yeah, I mean – that Denver defense, Miller's a good choice. I know a defensive player hasn't won since Lawrence Taylor, but I'm sticking with Miller right now.
There she is, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. You find her on Twitter at Jenny Ventress, V-R-E-N-T-A-S. Jenny, appreciate the time for joining us on the NFL Files. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate Jenny's time. That'll do it. That wraps up our podcast for this week. Make sure you're checking out all the archives posted up at audioboom.com. All you got to do is search NFL Files, listen for your favorite team or for any of the teams around the NFL. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.